This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at WILL.UIUC.EDU. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in this afternoon. Dory Greenspan is a fabulous baker. She bakes almost every day, but it wasn't always so. She set her parents' kitchen on fire when she was a kid, and she didn't bake her first batch of cookies until she was married. She's come a long way. A special correspondent for Bon Appetit, Dory Greenspan is the author of 9 cookbooks. She wrote the companion book to the PBS series Baking with Julia. It was awarded both a James Beard Award and an International Association of Culinary Professionals Award. Dory Greenspan's latest book is Baking, From My Home to Yours. The book contains 6 big chapters containing recipes to carry you through the year. It contains more than 300 recipes, including muffins, cookies, cakes, pies, and tarts, and spoon desserts. The book also contains tips for baking, and each recipe begins with some comments from Dory that contain information about the recipe and ways to change it to meet your mood. She calls it playing around. Listeners, I hope you'll join the conversation this afternoon. Your questions and comments are invited. Maybe you have a baking tradition or a baking memory you'd like to share. Join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Callers joining the discussion this afternoon will have a chance to win Dory Greenspan's book, Baking From My Home to Yours. So do join us with your questions this afternoon. Baking From My Home to Yours is published by Houghton Mifflin. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Dory Greenspan, welcome and thank you so much.
It's so much fun to be with you.
I heard you tell NPR's Michelle Norris about setting the family kitchen on fire a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
It was a driveway moment.
Yeah, it was exactly. Actually, I didn't know that expression when I set the house on fire, but that describes my parents' reaction, I think, because they pulled into the driveway to find the three. I have 2 brothers. The 3 of us sitting on the stoop with big, tall firemen behind us waiting for my parents to come home.
Oh,
yeah, that was a driveway moment for them.
Oh, gee.
You know, it's so funny. When my first book came out, my brother said, he looked at the book and flipped through it and said, "I see you didn't mention the kitchen fire." And I thought, well, you know, who would trust a cookbook author who burned her parents' kitchen down? But now I feel like, okay, it's my 9th book. I'm a woman of a certain age. I can fess up.
Yeah, yeah. When did you feel comfortable again anywhere near a stove?
Well, I wasn't allowed near a stove until I got married. And I got married when I was 19. I was a junior in college. And I was very excited about cooking and baking. And I learned from books and from necessity because, you know, we didn't have money to go out. And I was, you know, it was almost like playing house. I was a college student. This was really, I went from my parents' home to our apartment. And the idea of cooking and being able to invite friends in and share food with them was, it was so appealing to me. And so I really wanted to cook. And soon I discovered that no matter how much time you spent cooking, people were always waiting for dessert. And because it's funny. I mean, you have to eat your spinach before you get dessert.
Right.
So you know that you have to have food. But dessert is something special. And I've tried, over all these years, I've tried to find a reason for dessert. You know, some reason that, nutritional reason or something. But really, the only reason is pleasure. And I think that when you make dessert for someone, it really says, I care about you. And I love the process of baking, and I started to do that and spend more time baking than cooking.
Yeah. Well, dessert is frosting on the cake.
Yes, it is.
What kinds of things did you begin with when you were 19? What was that first batch of cookies?
Well, it was chocolate chip cookies made from Toll House cookies made from the recipe on the back of the bag.
Yeah.
Yep. I wasn't very adventurous when I got started. I did actually try and make a pumpernickel bread. That was adventurous, and it was also a disaster. It looked like, well, it looked like a hockey puck, kind of about the same size, same weight. But I started with chocolate chip cookies. I think that's probably what most people start with.
Yeah. And then how did you build your repertoire?
Well, I kept baking. I baked every day. I was in college. I'd come home. I baked. I worked, came home, baked. Went to graduate school. I did a doctorate in gerontology. I thought I was going to be in the university. And came home and baked and discovered that that's really what I loved. And I built a repertoire starting from books. I baked my way through all the books that appealed to me. As they came out, I would buy new books and just keep working at them and take little notes, you know, in the corner, say for whom I had baked something or what I liked about it or what I would change the next time I made it. And soon I found that I was really making up my own recipes.
Mm. And that's what this book is a little bit. It's a little bit about all that history. It's a scrapbook, it's been described as.
Well, and it to me, as I was putting it together, it felt like a scrapbook, and I felt like the luckiest person in the world to be allowed to do this, and then to be able to share it. I think of it as the 30 years of experience in the kitchen, what I've baked at home for friends and family, and I've been very lucky. I've worked with fabulous chefs, and so it's all the stuff that I learned from them, all the wonderful little tricks and ways of doing things, and it's all in the book.
Yeah. Speaking of fabulous chefs, when you were starting out, at a certain point, you wanted to know more, and you wanted to find your way, get into some kitchens. And at the outset, it wasn't easy. It seems like it was that hockey puck of a piece of pumpernickel bread. But you were not deterred.
Well, I really wanted to do this. It was after our son was born, and I knew, you know, I wanted to go back to work, but I didn't want to go back to the work I'd been doing. And my husband really encouraged me to look for a job as a baker. And my first interview, I was so excited. We had been out to dinner at a French restaurant in New York, and we had started to talk to the owner. And I told him that I was looking to change careers and that I really wanted to learn to bake and that I was hoping to find a job as a baker's apprentice, a pastry chef's apprentice. And he said, "Oh, this is fabulous. Our pastry chef is up to the top of his nose in work. He really needs someone. Go meet him next Wednesday at 9 o'clock in the morning, and we're so glad we met. This was meant to be," he said. So I show up at 9 o'clock in the morning, and I knock on the pastry chef's door, and he opens and starts speaking to me immediately in French. Doesn't bother to ask if I speak or understand the language. Fortunately, I did. He kept saying, all through the conversation, he kept saying how busy he was, and he was just doing soufflés every night, and he really needed someone to help him with the soufflés. He kept saying intermittently, "I'm looking for a boy." Mm. And finally I said to him, "You know, I'm not a boy." And he said, "Yes, that's the reason you won't get this job." But I kept going, and I did get a job at a New York restaurant that was considered the trendiest place in town. And I worked. My mother, she was so disappointed. I guess she was really hoping she could call me Dr. Dory as opposed to the apprentice baker who worked all kinds of hours in a basement and never saw daylight. But I loved it. I loved having the chance to be in a professional kitchen and meet other people.
Yeah. Well, it seems that chauvinism has faded away. In an article written about you that appeared in the New York Times Magazine back in 2004, written by Julie Moskin, you talked with her about three European bakers, three men, a Parisian bread baker, an Alsatian pastry chef, and another French pastry chef with whom you've now written two cookbooks with.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a way to summarize what you've learned from working with these great pastry chefs?
You ask a very hard question, Phyllis. To summarize it, you know, I've learned, it's interesting, I've learned many things. I think in some ways I've learned what I would think you would learn in any field from masters. You learn about discipline, and you learn about dedication, and you learn about hard work. But I've also learned something about creativity, and I've learned a lot of technical stuff. But the overriding thing that I've learned really has to do with passion, and that the really great chefs I've met, and as I said, I've been so lucky because I've worked with wonderful people. It's really about commitment and passion. Really, it's almost like a calling. This was what they wanted to do, and they wanted to be really, really good at it.
Mm. On the one hand, it's work and it's a calling, and that's part of the passion. But also, there's something one of the words you use in the book is play around ability.
Oh, dear. So isn't it nice that my editor let me get away with that?
Yeah, it's great. I like it. So it's more than work. It's also something you love.
Absolutely. And I talk about play around ability because, you know, baking, you can play around with baking. Lots of people say, oh, baking is very precise. It is. It's very scientific. It is. And there are certain things you just can't do. You don't want to mess around with the proportion of flour to liquid. You don't want to decide, oh, I don't need baking powder in this recipe. But once you follow the bones of the recipe, there's so many things that you can do to make a baking recipe your own. You can change the spices, the flavoring. Instead of cinnamon, you can use ginger. You can change the form of it. You can add chunky things to cookies. You can change the chocolate. Instead of using chocolate chips these days, what I'm doing is taking my favorite chocolate, a bar of it, and just chopping it up and using that as chocolate chunks instead of chips. There are all kinds of little ways that you can play with a recipe so that it becomes really personal. And that's also, when I was working with the chefs, also what I saw. I mean, they would dream recipes. They would dream about flavor combinations. And often what they would do is take a base recipe and then build those flavors into it. And it's what I encourage people to do in their own homes.
Yeah. Now, this now brings me to a cookie recipe in this book. It is dark and very chocolatey. It is crunchy and crumbly, and there's a nice bit of salt in it.
I know exactly what recipe you're talking about.
Yeah, world peace cookies.
Mm-hmm.
They're delicious.
You know, people often ask, what's my favorite recipe? And I say, oh, you know, I'll never answer that question. It's like asking me, you know, who's my favorite child? And I had one child, so I never had to deal with that. But I do really, really love this recipe. And it's funny because I really like crunch. I'm a crispy cookie type. And this cookie is, well, it's a shortbread cookie. So it's, in French, it would be called a sablé for sandy. So it's not really crunchy, but it is, and it's so simple to make. It's essentially a slice and bake cookie. You make a very simple dough, roll it into logs, chill it, slice it, bake it. But there's a real complexity to it, and I know it has to do with the salt. It's a cocoa, the ingredients are just flour, cocoa, brown sugar, granulated sugar, and salt, and chopped chocolate. And the salt changes everything. It really intensifies the flavor of the chocolate, and also it just makes it go pow. It's such a surprise. It's a great, great cookie.
Yeah. And when it crumbles, it's still delicious.
Well, you know, I've seen this cookie in various forms. I've seen it when it's been overbaked. I've seen it when it's been underbaked. I've seen just little crumbs of it. The dough is good. It's always good. You can't make this cookie be anything but delicious. And even the dough is good. And I'm not a cookie dough person, but it really is. And it's the surprise of the salt.
Yeah,
among other things, but the salt is really a great addition to the cookie.
Now, what led you to that idea? Let's put some salt in this.
Well, it's not mine. It's not mine, and this is interesting. When I was going over my recipes from my whole experience in the kitchen, I remade so many things. You know, I had notes saying that my friend Bill liked this or my husband Michael really loved this. And there were recipes that, you know, I hadn't made in a long time. And so I remade them to see, you know, how they would hold up. Were these still recipes that we liked? And I found that so many of them were lacking salt. And it was really working with French pastry chefs that salt became important to me. A pastry chef like Pierre Hermé, who's actually the World Peace Cookies are his, it's his recipe, he said to me at some point that he felt that salt in the pastry kitchen was important as it is in the regular kitchen. And for the same reasons that chefs use salt, pastry chefs use it, to really lift flavors. And as I went back and tasted some of my old recipes, remade them and tasted them, I realized I'd been so timid with salt that I always put like a little pinch of salt in anything chocolate, almost as though someone had said to me, you know, it's a rule. If you have chocolate, you have a pinch of salt. But then when I went back and made the recipes again, I wanted them to have a taste of salt, not just a pinch, but I wanted a little subtle background taste of salt. And I felt that way when I went back and redid recipes about vanilla, that I also hadn't used vanilla so that it would really stand up as its own flavor. It was always in a recipe to kind of round out other flavors, but not so that you could taste it.
Hmm.
It was fun to go back and retest, remake, reenjoy recipes and really see how my taste had changed.
Yeah. Can you say anything about why it is certain things added to foods make them spark? That's a chemistry question, I guess, but
well, you know, it's interesting. It's a chemistry question, I think, but I also think it's you know, it has to do with our personal tastes as well. But there are salt, certainly. Zest, lemon zest,
yeah,
or orange zest,
yeah,
really add another flavor and bring up. May I just give you a quick tip about zest, by the way? As I said it, I realized, and this I also learned working with chefs, if ever you're using lemon, orange, grapefruit zest, or even vanilla pulp, you know, the pulp from a vanilla mm-hmm. bean, the inner part of the bean, in a baking recipe, don't just add it to the batter. Add it to the sugar that you're going to use in the recipe.
Mm.
Put it right on top of the sugar, and then get your hands in that bowl and rub the sugar and zest together. And what you do, it's such a neat trick, because the reason you want to use zest is for the volatile oils. That's really where all the flavor and fragrance is. And by really, instead of just adding it, by rubbing it against the sugar, you're really infusing the sugar with the flavor, and it's almost like you're getting twice as much flavor out of the same amount of ingredient.
Yeah.
But I think zest, lemon certainly, any citrus flavor really adds some sparkle to
yeah.
recipes.
Yeah. Now, in the cupboard at home, I have a jar of sugar with vanilla beans in it,
mm-hmm.
and it's so good.
And it's so good. It's a great thing to do. If you have, vanilla beans are now they're so wildly expensive,
yeah.
but they're so wonderful, and you can use every piece of it. Most recipes call for slitting the vanilla bean the long way and scraping out that soft, fragrant pulp in the center. But the bean itself has a lot of flavor, and you can use it when you're making rice pudding or any kind of custard. Just put the bean in the liquid, and it will give its flavor to the liquid. And then after you've gotten what you think is every little bit of flavor out of the bean, you do what you do. Just dry the bean out, you know, rinse it, dry it, and put it with sugar, and it's great. Mm. You can also grind it up in sugar in the food processor.
Oh, there's an idea.
Yeah, so you even get more flavor out of the bean that way.
Okay, now with the citrus zest, could I take lemon zest and essentially do the same thing with sugar?
Sure you could. Sure
okay.
you could. It's better if you're... That's a nice thing to have on hand if you wanted to use it in tea, if you wanted to sprinkle the tops of cookies that you were baking,
uh-huh.
or even the top of a pie. If you were to brush the top pie crust with a little milk and sprinkle it with that lemon sugar, it would be great. But when you're making a recipe that has zest, it would be better if you could use the fresh zest and mix that in with the sugar.
Okay. Very good. Our guest this afternoon here on The Afternoon Magazine is Dori Greenspan. She's the author of 9 cookbooks. Her latest is Baking from My Home to Yours. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon. Love to hear from you this afternoon. Join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. 1-800-222-WILL. And callers joining the discussion this afternoon will have a chance to win Dory Greenspan's book, Baking From My Home to Yours. So do join us with your questions. What we'll do when you call in is we'll get a first name and a telephone number for you. And then at the end of the hour, or near the top of the hour, we'll draw a name out of a hat. Baking From My Home to Yours is published by Houghton Mifflin. Now, Harriet Williamson, the producer for this program, is a good cook and a great baker, and she is the one who made the World Peace cookies. And she did a very good job.
I bet she did.
Yes.
I think it's actually, I'm sure she's a good baker, but the fact is these are really good cookies to make, even if you're a beginning baker.
Yeah.
Because they are easy to make.
She wanted me to ask you a question, though.
Sure.
And that is about chilling the dough. That's important because it's...
It's very important.
It's apparently a very soft dough.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
At the outset. So is this something you learned by trial and error? It is. The instruction is chill for 3 hours.
Well, what you learn by trial and error is you know the dough has to be chilled, that if you were to just bake it, it would... You'd get a flat melt. The texture would just be all wrong. You can't get a shortbread texture unless the dough is chilled. It would just melt too quickly, and you'd have a almost like a lace cookie. And so you know that. What you learn by trial and error is you try to cheat. You think, okay, you know, I'm in a rush. I'll just stick those logs in the oven for an hour and see what I get. Not so good.
Yeah.
And yet that's what you learn. Like so much in craft, you absolutely learn by trial and error. But I'm not always in a rush. I try not to rush actually when I'm baking because I enjoy the process. You know, and I enjoy the process, and I want to take the time to enjoy the process. But yeah, sometimes I'm in a rush like everybody else, and so I'm always trying to see. Okay, so a little shortcut. And most of the time, you know, you can shave a minute off here or there, but it's not worth it. The result is better if you can be a little patient.
Yeah, very good. Let's talk with a listener now.
Sure.
Caller in Ashmore on line one. Hi.
Good morning, or good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I've got a question about caramels. My mother has made caramels for years and years, and they've always came out really super. But the last few years... After probably a week's time, they've started going to sugar.
Going to sugar, meaning getting grainy?
Yes, getting grainy.
Hmm.
But they're not that way for like a week.
And this is really only recently?
Yeah, for the last probably 3-4 years. And up until that time, they would keep, you know, a month or two at least, probably.
You know, I don't have an answer for you, but I'm thinking she hasn't moved. It's not a question of she's living in a climate that's different, more humidity or something like that.
And we're just, you know, getting ready to make them because we always make them at Christmas time, and that's why I was trying to find out. You know, I've talked to some other people and got some different recipes, and she uses half and half, and some people said to use whipping cream instead of half and half.
I use whipping cream, but I'm not sure that would change their becoming really sugary afterwards. And she's using the same ingredients, she's cooking to the same temperature?
Yeah, I mean, it's the same recipe for years.
You know, I don't know. This is not going to be a great help to you, but it's a story that I think of often in situations like this. Maida Heater, who's written such fabulous cookbooks. In her very first book, had a great recipe for a lemon pound cake. And I made that recipe all the time. And when her book came out in paperback, I wanted to buy it for friends. Bought the book, said, you've got to make the lemon pound cake, and the recipe wasn't in the book. It only appeared years later after she'd written several other books, and she said she couldn't understand. This lemon pound cake recipe was one she had made for years, and all of a sudden, it changed. And it just wasn't coming out the same way, and she couldn't figure out what it was. And the only thing she could attribute it to was kitchen gremlins. So I'm afraid that's not a great help, But there are, you know, I don't know. The only thing I can think of is really the temperature. There might be a change. Perhaps there's been a change in the actual sugar that she's using, having nothing to do with her buying a different brand. But perhaps there's some difference, or some difference in the half and half. Your ingredients really do change. I've had this with apples, where apple pies have become drier because apples have become drier. So that's a possibility. Or it could be kitchen gremlins.
What's a possibility? What temperature do you suggest to cook it to?
Okay, I don't offhand, and I have nothing to look at. I can't come up with the magic number for caramel.
Okay, hers is, I think, 246.
Okay, I'm just not sure about this. I would think 246, 248, but I just, as I said, this is the kind of thing that I have no head for numbers, and I just keep a notebook and look it up when I need it.
Okay.
Okay, I'm sorry. I wish your mom luck with it.
Thank you very much. Enjoy the show.
Thanks for the call. We'll keep our fingers crossed for that gentleman and his mom. And
his mom's caramels.
Yeah, and we'll all wish away the gremlins here. Let's think positively. Let's talk with another listener. Caller on a cell phone on line 2. Hi.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi. Looking for an ultimate sugar cookie recipe for rollout cookies. Can you help me?
For rollout cookies?
Yes.
Well, I had a plain sugar, the kind that we all grew up with, where the taste of sugar and butter is really that's what you taste?
Yes.
Well, okay, I have my grandmother's recipe, which might even be your grandmother's recipe. I sometimes think it's everybody's grandmother's recipe. Let me find it for you. It's just a plain sugar cookie that depends on you using really good butter. Let me... And... Well, also, I'm thinking of shortbreads, but no, I know what you want. Why can't you find things when you're looking for them? Have you made them? Do you have a family?
Well, I've tried to duplicate my grandmother's, and she used confectioner's sugar, almost like a shortbread, except these were kind of crunchy on the outside and soft on the inside, but she always used a gallon jar top for the cutter. Yes, she made huge sugar cookies, and they were just fantastic. But
okay, now I'll tell you about my recipe, and it's interesting you say confectioner sugar. I have 2 cups of flour, half a teaspoon salt, half a teaspoon of baking powder, a stick and 2 tablespoons of butter, a cup of sugar, and 1 large egg and 1 yolk. And some vanilla. Now, if you wanted to take a basic recipe like that and come closer to your grandmother's recipe, I'd suggest you try using maybe 1/3 cup of sugar and 2/3 cup, or maybe let's try half and half first. 1/2 cup of sugar, 1/2 cup of the confectioner sugar. Confectioner sugar will give you a softer, as you said, shortbread dough. In fact, this morning I just made logs of shortbread dough using primarily confectioner sugars to get that real tenderness in the cookie.
And
so I try that. And you could use this dough either to be rolled out so that you can use those gallon jar cutters, or you could form the dough into logs and do it as slice and bake.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Very welcome. Good luck. Next, we talk with a listener in Champaign on line 1. Hello.
Hi, I've got a question for you. You mentioned something about really good butter. What is really good butter, and where can I get it?
Oh, okay. I'm so crazy about butter. We don't have 3 days for me to tell you about butter, but I'm kind of urging everybody these days to do little personal butter tastings. I'll tell you from the start that all of my recipes were tested with Land O'Lakes butter because it's the only nationally available butter, and it's a good butter. But there are, and I've seen it now in supermarkets all across America, there's now a selection of butters. And what's fun is to taste what's now available. There are butters that have more butter fat than the standard in America is a minimum of 80% butter fat. In Europe, it's 82%. And some of the European butters are also cultured, which means that before the cream is churned, it's allowed to ferment so that it almost tastes like sour cream or creme fraiche at the point at which it's churned. And so the butter has a kind of tang to it. And those are really interesting butters. And some of them have very high butter fat content. There's a butter that I've seen, I don't know if it's on the West Coast, but I think it's in your area, called, I actually love this butter, Vermont Butter and Cheese Company Butter. And it's cultured, and it's very high butter fat content. It's 86%. And these butters are not right for every kind of baking, but they're wonderful in butter cookies, where the flavor of butter really counts. They're great in pound cakes, and they're good in crusts, in tart crusts. And you might have to, you know, try your recipe and see, because this extra butter fat, it's a lot of extra butter fat and a lot of extra flavor. But I did this little test where I did 3-pound cakes using 80% butter, 82% butter fat butter, and then this Vermont butter and cheese. And we had a group of people over, and we tasted, and we all loved the flavor of the pound cake made with cultured butter. So it's really fun these days, because so much is available, to taste and really play around with the butter and see what you like for your cookies or your pound cake.
Do you know of someplace online where you can get different kinds of butter?
It's a great question. I don't. You're going to have to Google.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Google away.
Oh, it's been so interesting to taste. We actually did, in a group that I belong to, the Baker's Dozen, it's a group in New York of amateur and professional bakers, we did a blind tasting of 15 butters.
Wow.
And, you know, you wouldn't think there'd be that much difference, but you really could taste. One was nuttier than the other. One was sweeter than the other. One felt richer in your mouth. It was fascinating.
Hmm. I have an idea for the next book club meeting. You pick baking from my home to yours, and you do a butter tasting.
Well, you know, the recipe that we used for the butter tasting, the perfect pound cake recipe, is in the book with the story of our tasting, because it was so interesting. And it really would be, everybody could make it their own pound cake using a different a different recipe.
Ooh, that'd
be fun.
Nobody had come late to that meeting. Let's talk with another listener. Caller on line 3 in Champaign. Hi.
Yes, hi. I had a comment going back to the sugar cookie question and discussion. And I just made sugar cookies last night, my mom's recipe, and she always added a half cup of sour cream to the butter that I found made this very nice crisp outside and nice soft inside.
And it sounds delicious, because sour cream really is a tenderizer when you're baking.
Yes, and I always found that was the best way, just because I was never a big fan of the really, really brittle, you know, hard sugar cookies, and so her recipe was always the sour cream. And she also added some nutmeg to the flour and the dry ingredients, so that was always a nice little touch, too. So I was just going to add that comment on the sugar cookies.
Oh, very, very nice.
Yes. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Next, we talk with a listener on line 2 in Champaign. Hi.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi. I live in a drafty house, and I've been into making feather rolls from an early 1930s recipe with potato.
Mm.
They're sort of mashed potato, and they're very, very light and wonderful, buttery.
And it's a yeast recipe, yes?
Yes. And yeah. It's a yeast question. Since it's such a drafty house that I live in, and it's really impossible to keep my kitchen warm enough, I was told by a baker in town that what you do is you boil some water and put it in a roasting pan and put it in the oven, which will then create a kind of warm environment, and then put the bowl with the yeast dough in it, and that'll be a draft-free, warm place for it. But the problem is my oven is a gas oven, and all the steam from the boiling water comes immediately out, and it kind of wrecks the whole idea of creating a warm place for my dough.
Now, you're going to laugh, but there are a couple of things you can do. I have we have a weekend house that's drafty, and I've done a couple of things. I've wrapped the bowl that has the dough to rise in bunches of bath towels.
Oh, including the top? Like you put plastic over the top and then you wrap it?
Yeah. So it's just like one big, it looks like a roly-poly bundle because you can't really keep it. But I just wrap it in towels. So it's really,
and just,
you know,
keep it in the kitchen.
And just keep it in the kitchen, yeah. I mean, the other thing you can do is if your house is not just drafty but really cold,
you could
put, you know, a heating pad under it. But I think that's too much. I think if you just bundle up the bowl in some towels, or even, you know, in a pillow, put a pillow under it so it has a cushion of kind of neutral air, you know, and then bundle it up. I think that should help you.
What
and that
about,
way your oven's free in case you decide you want to bake while something's rising.
I'm sorry, what'd you say?
That way your oven will be free if you decide to bake while you have your dough rising.
I just had this other idea. What about if I take my bundled up, the bath towels gave me the idea, but supposing I take a shower, so my bathroom is very warm.
Nice environment for some doughs because you're also adding moisture. But your dough probably, I mean, I don't know what your tolerance is before you, for the shower before you turn into a prune, but your dough really will probably need a longer time than you're going to be in the shower.
No, I mean just another idea of a draft-free place.
Sure, sure. But just bundle up that bowl and see how you do.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
You're Bye-bye. Very welcome. I got somebody saying, who in the heck is in the bathroom all this time?
Oh, I have to do it for my bread.
Let's take another call.
Sure.
A listener in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hi. I was just wondering if the peace cookie recipe is either going to be on the WILL website or are you going to give it on the air? Or
you know what I'll do? If for listeners who send me a self-addressed stamped envelope, I will send it out to you, and also I will send Dory's lemon cream tart recipe as well.
Oh, I love that recipe.
Oh, I can't wait to do
well,
this one.
I'm not a great baker, but the peace cookies sounded good.
Okay.
They are good, and as I said, it's a really good recipe for a beginning baker.
That's great.
Okay,
thank you.
You're very welcome. And the address to send your self-addressed stamped envelope to is send it to WILL Radio, The Afternoon Magazine, 300 North Goodwin Avenue, Urbana, Illinois, 61801. Well, back to this idea of butter. Shortening is also critical in some baked goods. And, you know, we're concerned these days about trans fat.
Absolutely.
And I understand now that Crisco has a variety that's made without trans fat. What can you tell us about shortening and... There you go. There's the question. What can you tell us?
Well, I know there are people who use a lot of shortening. I'm not one of them because I really do love the flavor of butter. I do, however, use just a little bit of shortening in my pie dough recipe. Because when you're making pie dough, butter will give you flavor, it will give you color, and it'll give you a certain firmness and crispness. But if you want flakiness, it's shortening that will do it. And we are concerned about trans fats, and we should be. But Crisco does have this new shortening that does not have trans fats. And so it's something that can be used in a pie dough. As I said, I don't use it very much. I think I have, there's one other recipe in the book, the recipe for the peanut butter oatmeal chocolate chipsters, a really terrific cookie that has just a little bit of shortening in it, and I've been using the non-trans fat shortening.
Mm. Well, now that we're talking about, you know, things that we will have in the pantry or in the cupboard or in the refrigerator at home, What do you always have on hand? What are some of the basics? And I know you love canned pumpkin.
I love canned pumpkin.
It's a great thing. I'm there with you on that.
I love the flavor of pumpkin. Yeah. I love the color of pumpkin, the texture. And I love that pumpkin just says, okay, I'll accept all kinds of flavors. Bring them on. I'll take spice. I'll take sour cream. I'll take heavy cream. And I'll just blend all of these together. And I think pumpkin is just a great, great ingredient in baking. But I'm a kind of lazy baker. I don't know that I would like pumpkin as much if I had to roast it and seed it and puree it myself. So I really do use canned pumpkin a lot, and I always have some. But, you know, I have the basics. I have flour, brown sugar, granulated sugar. I always have pure vanilla extract available. I have, you know, baking powder, baking soda. I have butter in the refrigerator, and I keep pounds of butter in the freezer. Butter freezes perfectly. And I'm never caught without eggs.
Yeah.
So those are really the baking basics. And then I do keep nuts in the freezer. Nuts are another thing that keep really, really well when frozen. In fact, that's the best way to keep them, because what makes nuts delicious, they're oils, but oils can go rancid.
Yeah.
So you have a much better chance of keeping nuts fresh if they're in the freezer.
Yeah.
But those are kind of my basics. I always keep chocolate chips in the house, but as I said, I really prefer to chop my own chocolate.
Yeah. We're gonna take another call here in just a sec. Maybe you would talk really quickly about a cornmeal, because that's another great ingredient you've got in a number of recipes here. And my husband and I have also discovered that the stone ground is wonderful, and it comes in a different – there are a couple of different – crunchiness levels, if you will.
Yes, exactly. The levels of how coarse it's ground.
Thank you.
I love using cornmeal in recipes. I use it in pound cakes and shortcakes, in muffins and in cookies, because it adds a crunch. It adds a texture that you really can't get from anything else. It adds a very subtle flavor, and it adds a very pretty color.
Yeah, and we keep that in the refrigerator as well.
So do I. I keep it in the refrigerator or the freezer.
Yeah, okay.
For the same reason, because it really does need to be kept fresh.
Shorter lifespan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk with this next caller, a listener on a cell phone, line one. Hi. Is there a caller there on line one?
I'm on line four.
Oh, okay.
I believe, but in any case, am I on the air?
There you are with us. Go ahead.
Hello.
Very much. Hello. I've enjoyed your conversation about butters, and one comment and one question. The comment is, in our kitchen at home, we have an advertisement from like the National Butter Council that has a big pat of butter, and it says, "You'll never find us advertising that we taste like margarine." And I think that's really wonderful. But the question I have, you talked a lot about butter, but what do you think of, kind of say something about the differences between salted and unsalted butter? And I will hang up and listen to you on the radio.
Okay. Very good question.
I don't use salted butter in baking because I like to be able to control the amount of salt that I use, and also because salted butter has a slightly less butterfat content than unsalted butter. However, you can use it. You can use it, you know, pat for pat, and you'll be okay. But I prefer to use unsalted butter and then add salt as I need it and want it.
Mm, okay. We're about out of time here. We've only got maybe a minute left.
That went so fast.
I know. Well, my question is, not only are we seeing more butters available, we're seeing different kinds of salt available.
Exactly. The salt. I was just in Texas, where I was at a central market, and they had a salt bar. And you could taste about 8 or 10 different salts and purchase them in bulk. And that's also, after you've had your butter tasting, you can have your salt tasting.
There you go. That sounds good. There, we have to leave it. And I think that you're going to be talking with Michelle Norris over a period of time here. And I really look forward to that, listening to the two of you on All Things Considered.
Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed talking to you.
Good. Thanks.
And your listeners.
I want to thank our callers as well. Dory Greenspan, thank you.
Thank
very
you.
Much. Dory Greenspan is the author of 9 cookbooks. Her latest is Baking From My Home to Yours. The book is published by Houghton Mifflin. And listeners, if you'd like to drop me a line and send me a self-addressed stamped envelope, I'll send you a couple of Dory Greenspan's recipes from the book, including the peace cookies, the World Peace Cookies recipe. And the address is WILL Radio, Afternoon Magazine, 300 North Goodwin Avenue, Urbana, Illinois, 61801.